When Tom was first here at Gloucester, he had a number of other business interests, like the Arrows team and so on.
Yeah.
Where did Gloucester fit into the priorities with him?
His main love in life was motor racing, I believe, but he loved the rugby, and he loved the whole thing with the rugby. But he also said that the motor racing and the motor industry is where he made his money. The rugby was where he spent his money. but he really did like it.
Yeah.
He really loved it here. Yeah. Had a special, I remember before I came here, before I started, I visited the club for a day and I looked round and I said to him after, "Tom, you've got a special club there, haven't you?" And he said, "Yes, it is. It's a really special club."
Mm.
Yeah.
You're preaching to converted.
Yeah.
Was it difficult to get his time and attention, though, on Gloucester Rugby at that stage?
Yeah. Whenever you talk to Tom, you had to talk quickly. And if ever you wanted him to read something, it could never be more than one page. And sentences were no good. It had to be an arrow with one line, and if there were more than about 8 or 10 lines on that piece of paper, forget it. So you had to be very, brief, but very concise. But if there were a lot of issues, he would simply want to be informed, but he would say, "Yeah, fine, Ken." And this is what I can hear him saying, "Now, fine, Ken, then just sort it out." I said, "Fine, just making you aware." "Fine." And it was almost like you were being told off.
But for raising it.
Yeah. It's almost like, "Fine, we'll just get on with it." And you could interpret that as being you being told off, but you actually weren't. It was just like, "Right, quick, get on to the things that matter." You know.
Well, that sounds to me as well like he's happy to rely on you to do it
and
make the decisions.
He was, yeah. And, if I had to deputise for him at Premier Rugby, I'd ask him what the issues were. And I'd say to him, "Tom, do you want me to come out and call you on this one?" And I think in the whole time, there were only two times he said, "Look, call me on that one if it does come up." In the end, he'd said to me quite often, "Ken, I'm absolutely happy with whatever decision you think is right." Which is nice.
So what were the issues he wanted to be involved in?
He would want to be involved in he was a very good chairman of Premier Rugby. He was a very strong figure. He had some great ideas. And he drove these things through. And when you've got 12 prominent, wealthy guys, it takes quite a special personality to get some sort of consensus, because they all think they know the answer. And if he was driving a certain line strategy through those clubs and he couldn't be at those meetings, he worked extremely hard, he would always be at those meetings, but if he couldn't and there was something that was of huge strategic value that could perhaps steer something, the end part of something, he'd want to have a bit of an input in those sort of things. But in the main, the day-to-day stuff, he was completely fine with.
I wonder if you could talk to us for a bit, Ken, about those early days of the development of professional rugby.
Yeah.
Sticks in your memory of them.
Yeah, it's a great, great thing you're asking, because I don't think rugby was ready for it, to become a professional entity. I think Sir John Hall had presented a dream and had presented something to clubs, and I don't think those clubs were ready. I don't think they had the financial wherewithal. I don't think they had the expertise in place. I don't think it was ready, and I think those early years were very, very difficult, particularly financially. I think the dream that was presented it wasn't achievable quick enough. So what was being presented is this: we will be in charge of our own commercial destiny. TV will want to take over. Major sponsors will want to come in. You know, as clubs, we will be in a much stronger position. Well, that was where it got to, but it wasn't quick. And that time meant that clubs were having needed benefactors. You know, most of the clubs were losing thick end of £2 million. You know, and if you were Gloucester, you didn't have a benefactor, you were in a lot of trouble. So I didn't think it was well enough thought out at the time. It's my personal view.
It was interesting when we interviewed Peter Ford. He said to us that he started from the position that he was totally against Tom Walkinshaw taking over the club, and he now looks back and says, "And I was wrong."
Yeah.
I guess there were quite a lot of people who felt like Peter at the time.
I think I always felt that having gone that first stage and having the huge resistance with the RFU, the thing was in a real mess. It was in a complete, there was a complete battle zone between the clubs trying to make it all work themselves. And I was actually on a board, a central board, between the RFU and the clubs. It didn't have any teeth, but it was trying to find a way through. And you could see, and I was on that for several years, you could see it wasn't, there was a complete anti between the two. The RFU, in my opinion, wanted the clubs back under their control. The clubs wanted to be away doing their own thing. And I think having stepped over that line, I actually think the right move would have been a complete breakaway. And so that the clubs were then completely away within their own league and they could have complete control of what they do.
And then, so why did the schism not happen?
It was a step too far.
And for whom?
For some of the clubs. Yeah. And Tom tried to get it there at one stage, and there were several clubs that felt that breakaway was the most important, was the best way forward. And there are clubs now that still feel that. There's a bit more harmony between the RFU and the clubs now, but at one point it was very, very heavy, full on, you know, lots, huge legal battles all over the place. But
there was a precedent, of course, 100 years before with rugby league.
Yeah, there was, yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. So in the end, I think the best fit that could be achieved was achieved. Some people felt the deal wasn't good enough, but I think it was a pretty good deal. But there's still lots of potential for rugby.
Is there not still a considerable amount of that tension, though, between
the
Premiership clubs and Twickenham?
But I think the most important thing is that there's now some of the personalities have now gone on the RFU side, and there are different personalities on Premier Rugby side as well. And it's all, these things are all about personalities.
And I guess there's been significant changes in terms of you're not just dealing with 57 old farts as well, so memorably said.
Yeah, you are. Yeah, you're dealing with now what appears to be a reasonable chief exec and a reasonable management board to the RFU. And there's a proper structure. There's a professional game board in place. And there's a lot of things that have been now sorted out. You know, we are much further down the track.